You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, normally I'd ask you what you did today, but I can see what you did. It looks like you got a partial makeover, and I love the new color on your fingernails.
Well, you know, I wasn't so sure if you liked the green last time, but I did go to a light pink this time just to switch it up. And I can tell what you did today, which was get a haircut.
Well, listen, when you ain't got much, you gotta be short, okay? Why lie? Why lie about it, okay?
Well, this is true. This is true. So I did switch up your coffee today. I don't know if you noticed,
but I'm
using Kona tonight, a little bit deeper, because I like my Colombian coffee, but got the Kona going because it's also a really good coffee.
Well, I love the Kona coffee, and I love it when we go to Hawaii and we try to snag back as much as we possibly can.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for doing that.
It's good. Well, speaking of coffee, you know how a lot of people say that they, you know, don't talk to me until I've had my first cup of coffee, right?
Right.
I'm probably not that kind of person so much, but a lot of people are. And a new study appeared in the Journal of Psychopharmacology that finds that if you have coffee before a conversation, it'll actually make you focus better and feel better about the people that you're talking to. And I'm wondering if that's why our conversations happen so great, because we're always having a cup of coffee when we're talking.
Well, I love the conversations at night. You know, I don't know if people do what we do, honey. And, you know, normally people, you know, they have a drink. And, of course, a drink is a great thing to have, especially wine, because we're both wine lovers. But I think at this time of the night for you and me, I just love to sit down with the coffee. And especially when I get a special treat, you make me like a cappuccino or something.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Speaking of wine, the study also did say that if you prefer maybe a more lively conversation, you could drink wine. So I do also love my glass of wine and kind of prefer that maybe more on the weekends. So, but for work days, it's a little tough.
Well, so drink more coffee, right? That's the idea. Drink more coffee. And you know,
well,
what?
I mean, mm-hmm.
Didn't I hear something that it's also... And they've gone back and forth about the health attributes of coffee, but it's back on the, you know, have coffee list again.
It's back on the good for you list, and it does say that it helps prolong your life. So it does have some good benefits to it, and of course, everything in moderation. But yeah, we actually did a show on that, on life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure, on things that used to be said to be bad for you, but now are good for you. So coffee is one, chocolate is one. Those are the only two that I memorize because those are the two things that I really like.
Well,
so
as long as I can enjoy it with you and have a good conversation, I'm all in.
Okay. So I'm kind of starting off my conversation with you with something that I just get annoyed with some of these things. So recently was the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And you know, I mean, that's just a traditional thing that we've seen many times. I did not watch it. And
I didn't watch it either.
Yeah, I didn't think that you watched it either. But what I did see was a lot of the kind of the blowback from the conversations the next day about the comedian, I think her name was Michelle Wolf, there. And I did see some outtakes of that. And I'm disgusted. I'm horrified. What are they thinking, and why do we have this level of continued vitriol at an event that's supposed to be for charity and supposed to be funny? You know, it used to be funny. I used to love to watch it. I remember when George Bush did it and when Bill Clinton did it, and it was funny, and this was not funny.
Well, you know, all of the ethics and honor have just left the mainstream media. And I go back even farther. I remember when Ronald Reagan went to, you know, the dinners. And he was so, because, you know, and he had been from Hollywood and he'd been an actor and everything. But there was a dignity about the White House at the time. And even though, you know, as President of the United States, when you go there, you're going to get roasted. you know, he just, there was just so much more dignity for the office. Listen, isn't this girl, that one of the gals on Saturday Night Live, isn't that where she hails from, is Saturday Night Live?
You know, I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I don't watch Saturday Night Live, but I did see some clips and I didn't think it was funny. And I really happen to like Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I really happen to like her. I just think she's got a lot of moxie. She's an intelligent woman. And this woman just was such a bully to her.
She was obnoxious.
She was. And you know, they talk about bullies and they talk about all these things that we shouldn't be. And those are the things that they are. And to have this woman sitting there who has risen to a really high point in her life and to be demeaned in that way and to have our president be demeaned. Like I said, it used to be funny and the jokes were funny. And they didn't do anything like this to President Obama at all.
Well, you know, honey, I'm pretty sure that this girl comes from Saturday Night Live. And the reason I bring that up is, speaking about getting a haircut, I was in the barbershop and they were talking about this gal. They were talking about Saturday Night Live and what has happened. And I don't watch Saturday Night Live anymore because it's just not funny. And that's what.
And because we don't stay up that late.
Well, that's true. You know, I tell you what, with tonight's coffee, we're going to be staying up tonight because I can
possibly
feel it. It's a little bit strong, sweetheart. Just saying. But you know what? Saturday Night Live isn't funny anymore because it's all anti-Trump, and you know where it's going. You know, when Alec Baldwin gets up there and he does the Trump thing, that's not even funny because it's all hate. And so, you know, as soon as he, you know, gets his Trump costume on, it's all going to be hate and it's all going to be vitriol. But I'll tell you what I did do, and you and I were working on opposite sides of the house. I was watching Trump. So I watched him at Michigan, and I thought he was fantastic, okay? Because there's a guy that just really says it what it is. You know, love him or not, you're always going to get an honest statement from this guy. And actually, it's more funny. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't see that. I had too much work to do on the computer, but I did read about it. So, but you know, the other thing that was a couple things that were disappointing about this, as well as just the vitriol that was the whole event, was that some people did stand up and leave. I did hear that people stood up and left, but really nobody at that time, they didn't rise to Sarah Sanders' defense. There was no one with honor or courage or decency. And is it any wonder that we have such a dim view of the American journalism right now? This is exactly why, because this is not what journalism is meant to be.
Well, I think you put your foot on it right there. And it isn't. And I don't think they're fooling anybody, okay, except those people that are always going to hate the president no matter what he does, never going to give him a break. You're always going to have those Trump haters out there. And those people are going to resonate with, you know, the mainstream media and CNN and MSNBC and the late night, talk show hosts that are always putting the president down. But you know what? We live in a flyover state and we get to visit a lot of flyover states. And other than the left coast and the right coast, which is also left, we're just not seeing that any of this resonates with good people. I think like ourselves, I see us as good people. I certainly don't see us as the deplorables.
Well, and I don't even mind that title if it means somebody like myself. But, you know, the editor of Teen Vogue magazine. So a magazine dedicated to your teenagers reading it said that the defense of Sarah Huckabee Sanders by prominent women is appalling and misguided. I mean, she thinks that everything was okay and that the problem just is that we don't have a sense of humor about that the jokes were a little too on the nose. And if I had a teenage girl, I would never let her pick up that magazine, because if that's the kind of people that are editing these magazines that have this frame of mind about people like Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I don't want my kid reading it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So, okay, well, that was kind of my gripe thing. And then, you know, the other thing really that's been a sad story, but I want to discuss it with you because I feel like there's some sides to this. And this is the death of little Alfie Evans in the UK.
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going to talk about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, you almost can't not talk about it because it brings up so many issues that are worth talking about. And first of all, I mean, it's absolutely tragic that any two-year-old would pass away. That's just, you know, a given. And anybody who's a parent, you know, their heart would break over this. And it's not, I don't even know if I should say that I have a problem with the whole story because there's so many facets to it, but I actually do. So here's what I want to say to you about it, Ron, is I understand that this little boy was terminally ill. At least they said he was terminally ill. And the doctors all agreed in the UK that he was terminally ill. But I'm not sure that they have the right to play God. And I do understand the laws that they have about it. And I do understand why they have those laws. Because if you turn that around and you look at people, some people that will not get their child help when their child needs it. So say the child has pneumonia or something that will progress to a worse level. And there are those people with religious beliefs and so forth that will not get their child help. Doctors will intervene. So this same rule makes them able to intervene in a case where they feel that there's no hope for the child.
Right.
So you have kind of a catch-22 there because, you know, I want it one way, but I may not want it the other way. But what breaks my heart about this is that it's really three different things. Number one is there were other countries willing to take this child and see if they could help.
Right.
And
I know
why,
Italy. I know Italy.
And Italy was one of them, yes.
Made the child. Italy
Even,
made it.
I think it was the Vatican, wasn't it? The Vatican Hospital?
Well, what happened was the Prime Minister of Italy created citizenship for that boy, made him an Italian citizen, which is an amazing gesture. The Pope called up and tried to intervene and was unsuccessful. So that's, and the Italian army, the Prime Minister made sure that the Italian, Air Force, had a jet standing by to pick up that kid and take him to Italy, which is only 2 hours away.
Right, and I think that they stopped the parents from being able to do that.
That's correct.
So that brings me to number two, which is for my number one was why not let him try every single avenue, okay? And number two is, you know, the parents also have to be ready to let their child go. They, I'm sure, mentally knew that their child was extremely ill and probably didn't have a chance. But as parents and just as human beings and as people, we want to give somebody that we love every single chance that we can. And the parents have to be ready to let that child go too. And they weren't ready. And somebody forced them to be ready. And I have a real hard time with that as a parent. And I'm wondering how you feel about that.
Well, thank you for sharing that with me, and thank you for asking me the question. You know, my thing is if you have an alternative that's available to you, for instance, the Italians, and the Italians are willing to allow that child to be flown at their expense to Italy to have them look at their doctors and whatever procedure that they thought they had that might be a life-saving procedure, and the parents are amenable to it, then who does it hurt? Okay? If you say that the child is terminally ill, then who does it hurt? Okay? Because if he's terminally ill, he's terminally ill. But if there is a sliver of chance to save that child, and I agree very much with what you said, the doctors, and I think the Pope said as much, it is only God's right to decide who lives and who dies, okay? And not that hospital. But here's something that's interesting that I want to bring up, because I look at it also legally. And I think that there is a difference between Great Britain and the civil rights in Great Britain and the civil rights in the United States, because we truly have a free country. But in Great Britain, they are subjects of the state or the country. And I think there's a difference. And maybe there's a lawyer that is good on international relations and constitutional law that it can explain that to me. But I think it's different when you're a subject.
Well, I'm going to beg to differ with you here, Ron.
Okay, well, we can do that. Go ahead.
Okay. And here's why. Because, first of all, the system, the medical system in the UK was actually, I guess, voted, you'd say, or said to be one of the best in the world. And I don't doubt that. And I do know people that live in England that do say that it's a really good system. That being said, they do have these panels, okay, that make these decisions like they did for little Alfie. And you're saying that our system is different, and for the most part, it is different. But what I think a lot of people don't realize is that when President Obama put Obamacare into effect, it had these same panels.
No, I remember.
And those panels, which he denied were there, were actually there, that would do this same thing. So they will decide if you are worth the cost of more medical care. So say that you're older and you get appendicitis or whatever it is, they're going to decide if you're going to get that treatment because maybe your life is not worth it at that point, you know. Well, or yeah. if you're terminally ill, they're not going to give you maybe chemotherapy or whatever it is that you need because, you know, you're deemed to be terminal anyway. And that was one of the most horrifying things to me about what Obama did. And people didn't believe it, but it's true. Now, I think you know, and we've never had this discussion before, that President Trump reversed that.
Well, I knew he reversed that.
Okay.
You know, the Obama model, okay, for Obamacare was basically a combination of Great Britain and Canada. Okay, so let's just take our next-door neighbor, Canada, and let's use that same analogy that you brought up about being older. And let's change the disease that you have to a kidney disease. And let's take the medical procedure is periodic dialysis. Well, there's only so many dialysis machines in Canada. And if you're a person that's in your late 70s or 80s, chances are pretty good you're not going to get that dialysis, because they look at it as an actuarial as to, you know, how much longer are you going to live and what benefit can you provide the state? And I just think that's disgusting. Okay. And that was the business model of medical care that we were going to in the United States. Now, I can't tell you about Great Britain because I honestly don't know, but you don't want that kind of medical system where you have paid into the system your entire life and you have monetary equity into that system, but yet you have a death panel, and I'm just going to call it what it is for that little child. That's a death panel. So if they're saying you can't leave our country with your child, even though there's another country willing to take him and provide free medical care at their expense, I just think that's wrong.
I think it's wrong too, but I'm going to give you a little refill, and I have more to say.
That sounds great.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
To Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting, the newest, most extreme, premier Western sporting event. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting pits one freestyle bullfighter against a Spanish fighting bull in a matchup best described as the most dangerous dance on dirt. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on earth? The future of extreme sports. This is not the bullfighting that you remember. This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. For more information and schedule of events, go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. That's ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Hey, sweetheart, can you pass me that cream? I want to put a little bit in there. I like that flavored cream.
You got it. Here you go. So you. I want to just finish my thought on little Alfie, because I still have a couple of points, really. So one is a continuation of what we were just talking about. And this makes me think of, when my mom had a massive stroke, and she was lying in the hospital, and the doctors told us that this was not survivable, and she was on life support. And I watched my dad run, and he was so not ready to let my mom go. And he had to go through some grieving process in the next few days and some acceptance that this was not going to be changeable, right?
Right.
And I feel like these parents never were able to get to that point, and that breaks my heart for them, because they still had hope. And as long as you have hope for your child and you're not ready to let go, then it just breaks my heart that somebody made them let go in really a way that was, I think, pretty tragic.
I think it's harsh.
It was harsh.
Tragic. I think it's harsh.
Yeah. Yeah. And then my third point really about this is, there have been so many cases of children and people that are never supposed to wake up, and they do. And people that are said to be completely, unable to recover from what they have. And there was just actually in the UK in 2015, a little boy by the name of Dylan Askin, who had cancer in his lungs. And he was, I think he was maybe 2 years old. And he was in a coma. And they decided that they had to unplug him from life support. And the parents, had come to peace with that, and they did unplug the life support, and that little boy woke up. And that little boy today, in 2018, is a thriving little boy.
Amazing.
So who's to say? The doctors said the same thing with that little boy. So that's why I think that it's important that we give every single opportunity, and that little boy should have been afforded that. And that is with me understanding all the laws and the reasons why, so you understand all that, but still there's a bigger emotional picture here and a bigger picture, like you said, that God should decide and those parents should decide and not the government.
I agree with you.
Okay. Well, I got out kind of everything that I needed to say on that, because
well, it's sad. I'm looking at
that
your
I think
face.
About.
I'm looking at your face, and it's a sad thing, and I can tell when you're upset about something. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Okay. Well, also in the news just recently, and I've been really kind of watching this, is this whole Bill Cosby thing. So, just wondering what your thoughts are on. I guess Bill Cosby was now found guilty of sexual assault. So what's your thoughts there?
Oh, my God. I've got so many mixed thoughts. I used to have the Fat Albert collection when I was growing up. you know, on the 33 LPs.
I forgot about that.
I did. I can, you know, I swear to God, I can remember coming back from school as a young kid, and at the end of the day, and of course we had we had a record player, and it was a big deal for me to have a Bill Cosby record. And I, like I said, I had the whole Fat Albert collection, and I would, you know, get home and I'd put that LP on, and I would just lay on my stomach and eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, because that was my little treat at the end of the day, and waiting for Mom and Dad to get home, and I would listen to Fat Albert, and I would just laugh. Even as a little kid, I just thought it was so funny. And you know, over the years, we've all grown up with Bill Cosby, with One Shot. I remember when I got to be older, I Spy. Do you remember I Spy with Robert Culp?
And oh, I do.
With his partner, and I loved that, you know, when all the spy series were out, you know. And I followed him through the different comedic roles that he had. And, you know, at one point, I think they called him America's father.
And I liked him, too, because he was funny and he... You know, he made a lot of sense when he talked, and, I mean, everything that he did was funny.
Well, you know, the other thing is he's a well-educated man. He had a doctorate in education, and I used to love when he sat down as an older man and would have these conversations with the media talking about the behavioral problems of kids and parenting and things like that, and I just looked at him, you know, as an important role model for our culture.
And he did a show with little kids, didn't he?
He absolutely did.
Yeah.
He absolutely did. And now, look at what's happened to this man. So apparently there's a dark side, but we'll see what's going to happen to him. Of course, I believe the sentence he got was 10 years. Well, I know he's in his 80s. So basically, you give somebody a sentence of 10 years, and that's a life sentence. Okay, and I didn't get to hear all the evidence. I'm sure little by little the evidence is going to come out. Being a forensic guy, I don't go with the emotional argument. I want to know what the forensic facts and evidence are to make up my mind. But it's an absolute tragic thing. But you know, also talking about the conflict I have about the women that he's worked with, and then the other women that have been the accusers, and how that all plays out. So I thought maybe, you know, you'd talk to me about some of that, being a woman.
Well, I mean, it does seem that he had a pattern here, and I believe that there's 50 victims at least.
That's absolutely amazing.
Right. So I don't think that there's a question that he did what is they say he did. Okay, the woman who sued and won this time, she had actually already been sort of paid off for her trouble.
But wait, so, a minute. Let me correct. Yep. Let me make sure I got something right. So we're talking about the same thing.
Okay,
he was just convicted of a crime, not a lawsuit.
No, I understand.
Okay, I just want to make sure that we're right.
But he paid her off some time ago, I guess, to avoid a lawsuit. I would assume that that's why he paid her off at
the
time.
A lawsuit or a criminal?
A criminal.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Same sheet of music.
Okay.
Okay.
So I don't think that there's any doubt that he did this. And his MO seemed to be the same for really almost everybody, right? He gave them pills. Then he sexually assaulted them.
Right.
And this over and over and over again. And here's the only thing that bothers me about this. There's no question in my mind that he's a sexual assault.
He's a predator.
Perpetrator, right?
Yeah, he's a predator.
Okay, so let's get that straight. But here's what I wonder, and I think about myself in these situations, and I think, would I go to somebody's room like that, knowing, first of all, he's a married man. A lot of these women were married women, I'm sure. I don't know. But anyway, would I go to their room and they want to hand me some pills to take before, you know, I engage in conversation with them? I would never do that. So I just...
Well, is that the way it went down, honey? Or did he sneak it in a drink or what?
Oh, no. everybody acknowledges that he gave them pills.
Well, who the heck would take pills for
God's sake? What I'm saying. Who would take, especially an unknown pill, you know? So who would do that? And here's where I have a little bit of a conflict, Ron. I just think that women, and believe me, I don't know all of the details of every case, but women have a responsibility to, you know, act smartly in situations like this. And I think that a lot of these Me Too cases that have come out with Harvey Weinstein and Matt Lauer and a bunch of these different characters that have, you know, been found out lately, it's all the same song, is that somebody went to their room, their hotel room, their house, their whatever, a private place with them. And what are women thinking? I mean, we need to be smarter as women and not put ourselves in those situations. Now, I understand that it's very, very flattering to have somebody as famous as a Matt Lauer or a Harvey Weinstein or a Bill Cosby who can further your career and give you, you know, a leg up, so to stand, in getting ahead in your career. But we really cannot be putting ourselves in those situations. And we have to use our brains a little bit more and not be taking pills and not be showing up in somebody's hotel room by yourself, because bad things will happen.
No, there has to be an informed choice. And there always is an informed choice, okay? It's just the balance. You know, there's a price to be paid for bad decisions, okay? And once you make that bad decision, and something happens to you, and you have your recourse, then let it be a criminal recourse. If you're saying, here's the thing that I have a problem with, and I'm conflicted about it, okay, as an old detective that used to work sexual assault cases. And I had a number of cases that were good, but I had a number of cases that were false. The next thing is, if you're going to sue somebody, you're not going to proceed with a criminal case, okay? You think somebody raped you, but you're not going to proceed with a criminal case, but instead of that, you're proceeding with a civil case because you're going to get some money out of it? I just find that duplicitous, okay? Why are you not starting with a criminal case and seeing where that criminal case goes, and then turn around if you win that criminal case, or even if you don't win that criminal case, and then pursue a tort or a civil case? But why ask for money and then get money and then years later come back and want to prosecute?
And I mean, a lot of years later, right?
I've just got a real problem with that.
Yeah, I do too. And that's the thing that keeps kind of niggling at me, is that it's not just with Bill Cosby, it's with all of these people that have been, you know, named in the news lately with all of these sexual types of cases, right?
And sweetheart, don't get me wrong, okay? I'm not saying that these people aren't victims, okay? I believe they are victims. But I just have a real problem with how the manner in which they come forward, and then they get money, and then it's like everything's okay, right? I got my money and everything's okay. And then years and years later, some of these cases are more than 20 years old. And
right.
They come back and they say, okay, well, now I also want to prosecute. Well, I'm going, well, what happened 20 years before you even filed the lawsuit? Why didn't you prosecute?
And that's my problem is just being smarter about these things at the time. And maybe it was a little bit different of an era and people didn't want to say anything. I don't know. But it's not just 20 years ago. It's 10 years ago. It's 5 years ago. I mean, these cases are coming out every day and people are coming back years later and saying this and that happened. We had the politician in what was the state, Ron? Was it Alabama?
Okay.
That you know, that somebody came out and said, well, he did this to me when I was 15 or 16 years old. You can't prove anything at that time. And
it was 30 or 40 years later.
Right. And why we want to put ourselves as women in these positions that things can happen in like that, that's what bothers me, is that I just do believe that women need to be accountable. Now, are women victims of rape and
absolutely
violent crime? Absolutely. They every day they are. And I want those criminals prosecuted, and I want justice done. But I want women to be smart, too, about trying not to put themselves in those situations. There is no amount of money or no acting job worth what you're giving up to get it.
But you know
and
what, honey?
Don't be taking pills from people.
Well, there you go. Don't be taking pills from people. But you know what? Let's talk about behavior for a minute and profiling for a second. Some of these women with these different, you know, high-end entertainment people like Harvey Weinstein and stuff like that. These people are young, naive, and they get a lot of rejection during their careers, okay? And it's really hard for them to get jobs. And I think they sort of balance out. You know, first of all, I think they're fairly naive. I agree with you. I think if you go to somebody's, you know, hotel room, or you go to their apartment or their condo, and you know they're married, or you know that they've got a reputation, and the word's out in the industry, and you know it is, okay? It's not that big of an industry.
Sure.
People are always talking about this stuff, and you go to meet this person, and he meets you at the door with his bathrobe, okay? Well, this is not going to end well for you, okay? Right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I mean, come on. Let's just be common sense. I mean, you could be 12 years old and figure that out, okay? But they don't. All right, and they make a decision to do what they do for a variety of reasons. But here's what they're not. Here's who they're not. They're not you, okay? And you are the strongest woman I've ever met in my life. You're the most independent, you're the most self-confident, and the most accomplished woman I've ever met. So we have to be real careful that we don't look at, you know, people that don't have your background and accomplishments. You know, picture these people being 21, 22, 24 years old and new in the industry and naive and stupid. Okay, and that's the place from where they make their decision.
Well, I guess, but there were some 17-year-olds, and he did give them a pill, and they readily took it along with some alcohol. But some of these women were older, so they really were a variety of different ages and types of women. And that goes for all of these different people, that if you look at all the different people that have been accused lately, the variety of women, I mean, there's not a type there, right?
Right.
They're just all over the map.
No, I think he was an open predator. I think he picked on everybody, okay? And it's particularly shocking to me when someone picks on a teenager, because you break that adult trust with them.
And, oh, you know, absolutely.
You should burn in hell for it, as far as I'm concerned, if that's what you did.
Well, and even worse, a child, but I haven't heard about any of that, you know, at least with him. But yeah, I mean, he's somebody that, like you said, he was just an American icon, and
that's the tragedy.
He's really fallen hard, and he's had some horrible tragedy in his life. But who would have thought? And the other thing that I really don't understand about this case is, boy, his wife is standing by his side. Honey, I don't think I could stand by your side. I'm very sorry. I just don't think I could.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
So I saw an interesting story this week that Mayor Michael Bloomberg is going to be donating $4.5 million to cover America's financial commitment to the Paris Climate Agreement, because President Trump, you know, had pretty much pulled out of that, and he's not sending the money over there. So Michael Bloomberg is sending the money over.
Well, you know what? Trump's not out yet, okay? He always leaves the door open, and he said he was reconsidering that. But, of course, it's always about a negotiation. And with Trump, it's always about what is America going to get out of this, okay? So I'll just leave it at that.
Well, yeah, he does say that he hopes that President Donald Trump will change his mind in the future about withdrawing from the treaty. But until such time as he does, he's going to make up the financial difference. And guess what? I think that that's absolutely great. He's got the money to do it. It's a cause he believes in. So let him fund it.
I'm sure he'll get a little deduction out of it, too.
Yeah. You know, there's a program, you know, we often talk about like welfare and I don't know. I'm kind of one of those people that thinks that people should have to work instead of just getting a free handout. I like the idea of a hand up instead of a handout.
Yep.
And, you know, we've been to Denver many, many times, and Denver has a huge amount of homeless people walking on their streets.
It does.
And yeah. And it's, and you know, I mean, it makes me actually not want to go there, because really there's so many on the streets hanging out. I'm a little bit fearful when I walk down the street.
Well, that's why we don't even go to San Francisco anymore.
Well, yeah, that there I'm not going. So last year, the city of Denver, and I'm really happy to see this, they launched a program that paid homeless people to work for the city. And 284 homeless people have done just that. They get paid $12.50 an hour, okay, and they work in 3 to 6 hour shifts. And they might be doing something in gardening, or they might be doing some form of public service work for the city, right?
Okay.
Don't have to have background checks. All they had to do is show up and work. And when they got done with their shifts, the program's administrator would also offer them some financial planning services at no additional cost to them. So try to educate them a little bit about handling money and so forth,
sure,
see what they could do about getting people off the street.
Well, that's a good idea.
It is a great idea. And by the time that the pilot period ended, over 10,000 hours of work and $109,000 in wages had been paid to participants. And what has happened from that, Ron, is just really, really neat. 110 of those people are now employed. So,
Know, that is a hand up and not a hand out, okay?
And only 15 are employed by the city. So the other 95 found other employment.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, we were talking about the guy with the piano skills and in the city put some pianos out for him, and somebody did a YouTube, and now he's got a record deal, and now he's got 40,000 in donations, and now he's got jobs all over the place. That is the type of programs that we need throughout this United States to help us deal with some of these absolutely atrocious homeless problems that we have, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I'm just, every city should emulate that, because it did so much for the people on both sides. Okay, it did well for the city, and it did well for the people receiving those services. And, you know, it's a win-win.
Well, that's a great story, Lynn.
Yeah. So just recently, you and I were in Washington, D.C., and in Georgetown. Love the food in Georgetown.
Love Georgetown.
Yeah, well, you know, when next time we go there, I'm going to look up this place called the Dog Tag Bakery. And somehow I do think that we passed by
I
it because
saw it.
Did
I
you
saw
see it?
I did see it. You remember
where
the where the over, what, you know, where they have the road, we walked underneath the road.
I do remember.
It's right there on that corner. Okay.
Well, I wish we would have gone in. And next time we go, we're going to go in. Because that little cafe, it's a little pastry and coffee shop, they take in our veterans and they teach them to navigate the transition from being in the military back into the civilian workforce. And I just think that that's a great little thing for them to do. And they've helped so many people for many years, which I just did not know. And, you know, I believe that that probably is the bakery that we walked by that had a line out the door. And I heard that it has a line out the door all of the time. Wow. So, you know, kudos to them, because anybody that can work with our veterans and the people that protect us and, you know, give us the freedoms that we have, just is a hero in my book.
Absolutely. That's another great story.
It is. I got lots of great stories today.
Well, let's hear another one, because okay. I love them at the end of the night.
Okay. Well, gosh, I really have a lot. Another one in Texas, actually. Love this story. In my business, in printing, you know, that we are now starting to do things called 3D printing. Well, they actually, in Austin, Texas, just a short way from our house, they made the first 3D printed home. And, you know, this reminded me, Ron, when you and I were working with the people in the Haitian government, with so many people that were hit from the hurricane there and had no home, and they were trying to get little homes, kind of like those little mini homes.
Remember the company that made those beautiful little tiny, they were, what do you call it?
They're like tiny houses, yeah.
Tiny, that's what I was thinking, yeah. Tiny houses. Those were fantastic.
Well, this one, you'll have to see the picture, is fantastic. It's the first 3D printed home. And you could actually watch, probably on YouTube, how they create these. It's a machine that creates the home. They actually built the home in 12 to 24 hours, and it's as cute as could be. And they're actually going to be starting to put these homes in rural El Salvador and Haiti. And you and I mean, we looked at doing this, not ourselves, but with the
partners.
Company.
Right.
Right. We were there.
Several companies.
And they couldn't get it done at the time. So apparently this company, which is... I'll have to look up the name. It's called Icon. I'm sorry. It's called ICON, Icon, which is an innovative construction company, and also New Story, a charity that is dedicated to providing, you know, shelter for families that need it in kind of rural places in the developing world. And I just thought this was so interesting, and I'm so happy to see this, because I know that just for what we were involved in, so many people need this. And that was a great story, and it's a great YouTube to watch, so you're going to have to look at that.
Well, you know what I was amazed about when we went out to North Miami, and we actually went to Little Haiti, which is where that conference was, and mm-hmm. we got to meet all those mayors from that country.
From Haiti.
You remember how impressed we were with how much they knew about, you know, their cities and how educated they were and how what good speakers they were. I mean, they blew our politicians right out of the water. I mean, I was so surprised and very gratified to see, you know, how those mayors, you know, care about the population. Now, the government itself is a shambles, and it's extremely corrupt. But, you know, that's a regret that I have personally, you know, that we weren't able to do more because all of that corruption got in the way. Because I'll tell you what, I would have worked with any of those mayors. I was so impressed by them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm gratified to see that. So I have a hero for you.
Oh, let's hear
And it's a New York firefighter. And with us having a son that's a firefighter and our son, you know, has so many life-saving medals as a paramedic. It's just, you know, this is a job that these people are heroes. And so this firefighter actually was on vacation in North Carolina. He saw three young girls in the ocean caught in a rip current, and they couldn't get back in. And so he took action right away. First, he ran to the girl's mother, who called 911, but he didn't wait for help. He got into that ocean and he swam out to the girls. Said he had a very hard time getting back. He got all three girls and had them hang on to his feet, and he got them back into shore. So the very day before that, we lost a four-year-old boy in that same surf out there to a rip current. So that could have been the situation had he not sprung into action. So he is my hero, Sean O'Gorman from the Oswego Fire Department, that saved these three little girls.
Well, you know, we go to Hawaii a lot, and there's the rip currents, or there's always warnings about them, and people need to remember that, you know, if you get caught up in that rip current, you know, don't fight that current, right?
I put my ankles in because I don't like sharks. So, do you have any good news today?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know,
was it all my good news?
Well, you know, I saw a story on Fox News that I really loved, but I didn't know too much about it because they didn't know too much about it. But there was that teenage girl that had some sort of disability. I don't know whether it was a disease or she'd been in a car accident or something.
Oh, no, I did see that too. She had a surgery that didn't go so well.
Okay, and she wasn't able to walk, right?
Right,
so she
right.
She was severely handicapped as a result, but her boyfriend wanted to take her to the prom, and so she had, you know, months to recover. And what she did was, you know, he thought he was going to be taking her in a wheelchair, and I'm sure they brought one just in case. But when he came to the door all dressed up in his tuxedo, she was there. They opened the door for him, and she was in the hallway in a beautiful dress, and she actually walked over towards him. And he was just amazed, and just to see the look on his face was just something to behold. And apparently they had a wonderful time at the prom, and they elected her to be the prom queen.
So, oh, good.
Yeah, so that's my good news story.
That is a good news story. So when the presidential race came to an end, this last presidential race, we just had a lot of divisiveness in this country, right?
Well, sure.
And there was a couple people, Justine Lee and Tria Chang. They were sad about the political divisiveness that showed up on their social media feeds. And the reason I like this story, Ron, is because it's going to point out to you something that I learned by being on Life Liberty. So instead of joining in on the online arguments, they decided that they wanted to bring people together and actually bring them together in person. So they started this little group called Make America Dinner Again. So instead of Make America Great Again, it's Make America Dinner Again, MADA, META. And it asked strangers from both sides of the political aisle to sit down and have dinner together. So there's a website for it. And although there's, you know, it says that there's plenty of avenues to protest and donate and fight and all that type of thing, that Make America Dinner Again is an avenue to listen. So they get about 6 to 10 guests who have differing political views and who also have our country's best interests at heart. And they, you know, find a place to get together. And they so far have had 13 dinners across the country from California to Washington, D.C. And more people are reaching out and finding this group. And they're doing some GoFundMe things to help finance the dinners. So what I really like about this is in doing Life Liberty and the Pursuit of Pleasure for America Out Loud, what I learned for myself was that we have much more in common than not. So even though there are people on that show that are much more liberal than I am, or politically different, or socially different, or whatever you want to say, we are all 10 different women with all different backgrounds and all different political persuasions. But what I learned is that we have much more in common than we don't have in common, and that those few things that we don't have in common, we shouldn't be bickering and arguing about. And I love this idea. In fact, I would love to do this because I just think this would be a lot of fun. I'm going to look it up and just see if there's anything happening in an area near us, because I just think it would be something we could all use to, you know, kind of calm things down.
Well, you know, the way I look at this, and all this divisiveness really bothers me, because, you know, you and I are conservative people. We have our own ways of looking at things, and I know there's other people that look at it probably 180 degrees. But, you know, here's the deal. We're all in it together. We're all Americans, okay? So we're not this type of American or that type of American. We're all Americans. And the problems that affect us all, okay? So why do there need to be insults? Why do there need to be name-calling and all of this stuff? So I think that's a wonderful last, you know, a wonderful lasting story, hopefully. And it's a great news story.
Yep.
That's it.
I like it. Well, I'll get the dishes tonight and you get the dog. How about that?
Well, that sounds great. Hey,
okay.
But I got to warn you, I'll probably be up for a couple more hours because of this coffee.
Sorry about that.
Okay, sweetheart.